Hi, everyone. I'm Jordan Burgess, and this is Thinking Outside the Portfolio, our quarterly conversation on the market with Fidelity's Klaus DeVille. Hi, Klaus. It's great to have you back.
Hi, Jordan.
Klaus, when we last spoke, the new administration hadn't taken office yet. Vaccine rollout was really just getting started, and the relief packages were really just discussions. But now that we're starting to see the impact of more shots in the arm and checks in mailboxes, can you give us a sense of what that's doing to the economy now and maybe going forward?
Yes, Jordan. I think it seems to me that everything is sort of coming together right now, and we could have a fun summer from a personal perspective, and possibly the strongest economies that we have seen in years as well. Specifically, I'm looking at four elements here that are coming together: vaccines, pent-up demand, the fiscal stimulus bill, and a very accommodating Fed. So let me just briefly touch upon all four of those. On the vaccine front, we are administering about 3 million vaccines a day. Last week, one day, we actually hit over 4 million. And it seems to me that this goal that the administration has set by mid to end May, that every adult who is willing to take a vaccine will have access to it, is very, very realistic at the moment. And that should really allow us to start normalizing our lives again. And when we start normalizing our lives, I'm sure all of us have a lot of pent-up demand. There's lots of things we didn't do over the last 12 months, travel, couldn't go out for dinner, couldn't go for concerts, sporting events. All of this will be sort of becoming available to us again. And what has happened really, and what is driving a lot of that spending in this area, is actually because we couldn't do this for the last 12 months. If you look at household balance sheets in the U.S., we have saved collectively about $1.2, $1.3 trillion over the last 12 months. That, again, we saved by not spending it on those things. And I think that is going to be sort of one of the factors of economic growth. The other factor is obviously the stimulus package. You've all seen the numbers, $1.9 trillion. That is about 11% of GDP. If you compare this, by the way, what we did in 2009, the second year of the financial crisis, that was only 6.9%. So it's a much, much bigger number from a fiscal stimulus perspective. And in addition, we might even have the infrastructure package in the fall coming in as well, and sort of lifting economic growth as well. And so, and the last part of those four is the Fed. The Fed has said that it's going to stay on the sideline. It's keeping interest rates low. At the moment, they are not wavering, and it looks like interest rates will stay at the levels where they are, at least short-term interest rates, until sort of 2023. And if you look at sort of what Wall Street is thinking, and I'm quoting now the forecast from major Wall Street firms, they believe that economic growth over the next 12 months will be in the 7 to 8% GDP growth for the next 12 months. And this is going to be maybe even faster than China is growing right now. And it will be a very, very different economy that we hopefully will be in over the next 12 months.
With all of that as a backdrop, particularly the 7-8% GDP growth number that you just stated, what do you think this is all going to mean for equities?
So we are not going to repeat last year, right? Last year was sort of a generational year in returns. We're not going to get that magnitude of returns going forward, but we are still early in the business cycle. Normally what you get early in the business cycle, you get positive returns on average, not every year, not every quarter, not every month, not every day, but you get positive returns in the business cycle through early, mid, late, until you hit the next recession. We are now transitioning from early into mid cycle. So that normally means positive equity returns. And what it also means is, if history is sort of a guide here, that you probably have a runway of 2, 3, 4 years until you hit the next recession. And during this period, as I mentioned earlier, on average returns are, unless you are in a recession, actually positive going forward. So I'm quite optimistic that the equity market is not going to participate as last year. That was obviously sort of, again, a generational year. But we should have positive returns on average going forward.
So a little bit of a bullish outlook.
Yes.
In early transitioning to mid. What do you see as some of the concerns, though, that our clients might have? And I think something's on the rise. Are we finally going to see rising inflation?
Yeah, Jordan, there are a lot of concerns out there, and inflation is probably the number one concern that I get. And if I see sort of one question coming up over and over again, I look at sort of what are the markets telling me this indicator is likely going to do. And for inflation, it's actually possible to look at the bond market and get a sense of where the bond market thinks inflation is going to be. And so the way they do this, it's called break-even spreads. It's basically looking, for example, at a 10-year treasury and a 10-year TIP. And the break-even rate is the inflation rate at which the returns of the 10-year treasury and the 10-year TIP are identical. And whatever that inflation number is viewed as the fixed income estimate of inflation going forward. So if you look at these break-even splits, what you come up with is the following. The inflation rate right now is about 1.7%. For the next 12 months, the bond market thinks that inflation is going to increase to about 2.7%. And what it's then predicting is a gradual decline over the next years going forward. The initial sprint in economic growth is leveling off. For the next 10 years, it's estimating inflation to be about 2.3% for the U.S. on average. Now, 2.3% over the next 10 years, to me, does not sound scary at all. It's barely over the Fed's goal of having inflation at least at 2%. I think that's the number we can all live with. And historically, if you look at equity market valuations, the sweet spot in PE values given to equities over the years has been that at a 2% inflation rate, the PEs are actually the highest. The 2% inflation rate historically has yielded a PE of 18 for the equity market. If inflation is lower, the PEs go lower, and inflation is higher, the PEs go lower. So it's actually hitting the sweet spot from an equity market perspective. So to me, I'm fairly relaxed about inflation at this moment in time, realizing that we are going to get a significant increase here over the next 6 to 12 months.
So a little bit of a spike, but a 10-year view at 2.3, which as you described is somewhat benign on a relative long-term basis. Let's transition to interest rates then. Are they on the rise too?
Well, that's the right follow-up question, Jordan. And interest rates have risen. We all know this, right? When this airs, we are probably around 1.7, 1.8 in the 10-year interest rate vicinity there. But if you go back a little bit and sort of look at this over the last 12 to 13 years, pre-COVID, the 10-year traded between 150 and 3. That was the interest rate trading range that we had. And what, in my opinion, has happened here is that we are just back to the trading range that we were in prior to COVID. It's merely a normalization of interest rates, not something that, to me, looks very, very threatening. We should also recall that over the last 10 years, with the 10-year trading between 150 and 3, the equity market did, for the most part, fine. The economy did fine. And so I think from that perspective, I don't think that's a big issue at the moment. The other thing that I always ask myself when we go through these periods of rising interest rates is the question of why interest rates are rising. Are they rising for good or are they rising for a bad reason? A good reason would be interest rates are rising because the economy is growing and the rise in interest rates is just reflecting a pickup in economic activity. What this means is if the economy picks up, so you get more employment and people have more money to spend, that leads to higher corporate revenues, that leads to higher corporate profits, and that is normally good for equity. So if interest rates are rising for a good reason, reflecting a pickup in economic activity, that has historically been good for the equity market. And I think that's what's happening here as well. I should note, just for full context, what would be a bad reason for interest rates to rise? And this goes back to the inflation question. If inflation is getting out of control, and the Fed is raising interest rates to cool down the economy and cool down the inflation rate because they are worried about this getting out of hand, that would be a bad reason for interest rates to rise. And that historically would be a negative for equity prices. But we clearly don't have this at this moment in time.
So just to recap kind of the two questions, and a long-term look at inflation on a relative basis being somewhat benign, you quote the kind of the 10-year view of 2.3. Positive contributors as to maybe why interest rates have kind of popped a little bit related to economic growth and outlook for that, increasing economic activity, but not threatening, to recap what you said.
No, as long as we are staying in this sort of inflation period between 2 and 2.5, as long as we are staying in that trading range that we stayed in the last 10 years from an interest rate perspective, which the bond market expects, And I frankly expect as well, quite frankly, and the reason, and I haven't touched upon this yet, but it's a valid point, and I'm glad you mentioned this, Jordan. We believe that after this initial spike in economic activity, that over time the economy is going to still grow, but grow at a lesser pace and probably go back to its trend line growth that we had before COVID. This was rather pedestrian. And the reason why we had rather pedestrian growth was that our demographics are unfortunately not leaning into a lot of economic growth because we are aging, the working population is shrinking, and that normally leads to a more muted growth outlook. And that's also the reason why the bond market is looking at inflation to come down again, because its long-term growth outlook is sort of more akin to what we had prior to COVID than the next 12 months that hopefully lie ahead of us with a lot faster growth.
Great. Makes sense and very helpful context. Thank you for that. So let's switch gears a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about the higher tax warnings we heard about during the election. Are clients concerned about those predictions coming true?
Yeah, our clients are concerned. And I think that's valid. And it has started to sort of pop up again as the Biden administration has sort of rolled out in more concrete terms what they are thinking to do with infrastructure in the fall. I would say sort of two things to this. The first thing would be that I don't think they are going to be able to increase taxes as much as they want to. That already becomes clear because some of the more moderate Democrats have come out and said they don't want taxes to rise that much. So I think there's some headline risk here. But I think what they actually are going to accomplish regarding tax hikes might be a lot less than they are talking about it at the moment. Secondly, this was striking to me as well. One of our colleagues looked at the history of what does an increase in taxes actually do to the equity market. And what she found is that in the year prior to a tax increase and the year in which taxes were increased, the equity market did actually better than its historic average, which sounds sort of very, very strange, right? In a year where taxes are increased or where taxes are being announced to increase going forward, the equity market does better than its historic average. The reason for that is twofold. One, governments only raise taxes when the economy is good. So you normally have a backdrop of a very, very strong economy when you get sort of these tax hikes. And we certainly should have this here as well. And secondly, when governments increase taxes, they normally do something with the additional revenues they receive. And some of these new spending initiatives are stimulative to economic growth. And you could see infrastructure package here as well as leading to more future growth as well. And so the impact of tax hikes to the equity markets are actually quite muted because of these two reasons.
Okay. Makes a lot of sense. The other thing I think we're hearing about from clients is about equity market valuations. You know, should that be a concern for our clients?
John, you hit the four big concerns: inflation, interest rates, taxes, and valuations. That's sort of the last one. And this one on the surface looks like it's a valid concern. If you look at the PE ratio right now, the equities are at about 22 if you take the next 12 months earnings. So that is looking a little stretched compared to its historic average, which is about 16.3. So it looks a little bit high at the moment. There are two things going on, I would say. The first thing is, if you look historically, coming out of recession, and by the way, we are really just coming out of recession. Coming out of recession, PE ratios are always stretched. You can go back to the great financial crisis, the internet bubble, to the recessions in the 90s and 80s. Every time coming out of a recession, equity valuations were stretched. Why would that be the case? Just think back to 12 months ago when the equity market bottomed at the end of March and equity markets sort of went up. At that point, the economy went still down and corporate profits went still down, right? I mean, we could not see a turn that the equity market was seeing. So equity market reacted first. Well, what's happening if equity prices go up and corporate profits are still falling? You have an increase in PEs. And this is exactly what's happening, recession after recession after recession, is that you come out of a recession, the equity markets anticipate it early, and because of that, valuations are stretched. And what happens then in the years after the recession is that the equity market normally still goes up, but earnings are growing faster than the equity market goes up. And so the market normally grows into these valuations. And I think this is going to happen this time as well. I believe earnings are going to sort of ramp up quite quickly. And it seems to me at the moment, if you look at sort of earnings announcements, they're consistently upgraded going forward. So I think we are going to grow into these valuations. The other thing to keep in mind is there's an absolute valuation perspective, but there's also a relative perspective. We talked earlier about inflation, Jordan, and I mentioned the market is expecting inflation to be at 2.7%. If you have money invested in a money market account, your rate of return is zero. Inflation is likely to be 2.7%. So if you keep that money in that money market account, your purchasing power is going to be diminished by 2.7%. The numbers will still look the same in your account, but what you can actually buy with that money in your money market account has diminished by inflation. How expensive or cheap is that? You're guaranteed almost to lose purchasing power in your money market account. And I think relative to this, inflation, you have at least a chance to earn more than inflation. I would say a good chance to earn more than inflation. I think compared to your money market accounts, I think actually equities look quite attractive to me here.
All right. So a little bit of the payoff question. So we got a lot of things going on here. We've put it all together. We've got vaccines. We've got stimulus. We've got concerns about inflation, potential tax hikes. We just hit the valuation piece. So how would you position a portfolio at the moment?
So here's what I would consider if I would be an advisor and I would talk to my clients. I would probably consider to overweight equities. We'll have, I'm quite sure, a pretty strong economy going forward, and that should eventually lead to positive equity returns. So I would overweight equities. I would broadly diversify within equities, and I would really try to cover all nine Morningstar boxes, and I would cover emerging market equities and diversified equities. This is going to, in my opinion, lift everybody's growth a little bit, and everybody should benefit. This should be a worldwide phenomenon, and if you want to have broad diversification and be broadly invested in it. Having said this, I would set maybe two areas of emphasis here. And those two areas of emphasis, to me, I have a little bit of more of the long term in mind. So there's this short term cyclical recovery, obviously, but in the long term, I talked about how year two, year three, growth rate is probably going to be going down again, and we are going to end up probably in this more pedestrian growth that we had pre-COVID. So I think you want to have an emphasis in areas that can grow without a lot of economic growth. So corporations and sectors and countries that can grow without a lot of economic growth. And to me, I would overweight innovation. That is large cap growth. That is healthcare and that is tech. And I would overweight emerging markets. And here, the catalyst for maybe more economic growth is that their demographics are much better because they are younger. They have a growing labor force, and improvements in technology are only going to rise, and this is going to help their economies going forward. So that would be my equity allocation. On the bond side, I would sort of barbell my bond holdings. I would have parts of my bond holdings sort of reflecting my optimistic outlook on the equity markets. I would consider emphasizing floating rate notes and high yield as areas to reduce their credit risk and say provide a little bit more income here. And then I would barbell this with a fixed income portfolio that does the exact opposite, that is thinking about sort of if something goes wrong, I want some diversification, I want some income, some stability. And that would be investment grade bonds, that would be treasury, and that would be cash and money markets. And the reason why I think this is still necessary is that things can go wrong, right? I mean, we touched upon four reasons you could be concerned. I don't think those four are that valid or come into play here. But there are reasons. And my number one fear is that this virus is going to become vaccine resistant. And all of a sudden, we have to start over again because existing vaccines are not going to work. And then we might have another lockdown, another shutdown. And if this is the case, you can imagine what this might do to the equity markets. And you want for your clients some stability, some diversification, and that would be investment-grade bonds, and it would be some cash and some treasuries.
So diversification, diversification, diversification. So
absolutely, yeah.
All right. Can we dig in a little bit to this value versus growth debate? You kind of went there a little bit where you talked about overweighting equities, but with broad diversification across all nine style boxes. Then you made a case for growth a little bit on the long term in areas, particularly with innovation as a theme.
Yes.
In emerging markets. Could you talk a little bit more about the growth and value debate?
Yeah, I think it's not either or, it's both right now. And to me, there are sort of the two elements to it. In the short term, because of this hopeful spike in economic activity over the next 12 to 18 months, that should benefit predominantly cyclical companies and value stocks. And I think because of this short to medium term outlooks, I think value should have a prominent position. But I also mentioned that this is probably only 12 to 18 months, and then we fall back to our long-term trend growth based on our demographics. The market is probably starting to look ahead to this period at some point, much earlier than sort of this period of strong economic growth. And then you need, again, companies that can grow earnings without economic growth. And that's where the growth part is coming in. So that's the way I would think about it, that you need both right now because they work at different time periods.
Great. So just sticking with the diversification theme. All right. Well, what a way to wrap up. Klaus, as always, thank you for your insights. It's so important to have points of view like yours to get a picture of what Q2 will look like. And thanks to all of our listeners, of course. I'm Jordan Burgess. Please join me for more episodes of Thinking Outside the Portfolio.
Information presented herein is for illustrative purposes only and is not a recommendation or an offer or solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Views expressed are as of April 2021, based on the information available at that time, and may be changed based on market or other conditions. The opinions provided are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. Investment decisions should be based on an individual's own goals, time horizon, and tolerance for risk. Nothing in this content should be considered as legal or tax advice, and you are encouraged to consult your own lawyer, accountant, or other advisor before making any financial decisions. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Diversification and asset allocation do not ensure a profit or guarantee against loss. Stock markets, especially foreign markets, are volatile.